This audio download was recorded at the Dublin May Day March in 2010. You'll hear some opinions on the organisation of the march, some music, and Arthur Scargill giving you the address at the end. This is followed by me giving an introduction to the anarchist origins of May Day.
364 days a year for capitalism. We should have one day a year for workers at least. Come on, people, let's get out.
So this year, it seems like we've had a smaller number or presentation of mourners than usual to actually signify the death of the left, or the possibility of even organising something in terms of the death of the left. So not only is it good enough that our trade union leadership have organised us a pay cut for the next 4 years, and 14% are going to do nothing about the 14% that was cut off public sector workers, they didn't even bother telling people that May Day is International Workers' Day, so that you might have some people down here to fucking listen to something or try and rise some people up out of the slumber. It was what was Larkin had said, the great are only great because we are on our knees. Well, obviously, the trade union leadership have taken that to mean we're actually asleep. We're in a coma. We're not just on our knees. We're actually under the ground, 6 foot under the ground. Welcome to the funeral.
Someone going past the headquarters of the Dublin Council of Trade Unions last night pointed out that in their window they didn't even have a poster up for this. That's how much they think it's important to tell the world that this event is happening, that we should come along.
Well, she did. The man still here, and the man will give us his opinion now. It's the Arthur Scargill.
Chairman, comrades and friends, as we walked down O'Connell Street, I commented that it's not often that I walk behind the police. They usually follow me. But he felt proud to walk past the statue of Larkin and towards the statue of Connolly, two of the great leaders of the working class and the trade union and labour movement. May Day is a day of solidarity, a day when we pay tribute to those who have fought on our behalf in order that we can be here today to say the things that need to be said. You heard previous speakers refer to the nature of the crisis that faces Ireland, the United Kingdom, yes, and practically every other country on earth. Don't be fooled by those who say it is a crisis of the international financial market. It is a crisis of the capitalist, rotten, corrupt system. That's the cause of our crisis. In Ireland and the United Kingdom to globalisation and to the European Union is a disaster that would have been condemned by both Larkin and Connolly. It's tied economies to systems which dictate the policies that we must follow. But we can most only follow them if we're so short-sighted as not to see that there is an alternative. You know, what is the price that we are paying? We're paying it in unemployment. The figures put out by the government are a lie. In the United Kingdom, they tell us that the number of unemployed is 2.5 million, 21.5%. of the workforce in Britain is the true figure. 8.1 million are unemployed in the UK. And here in Ireland, it's 25% of the workforce who are unemployed. All around see industry and service after service coming to a standstill because of the adherence of governments to the capitalist system. I want to point out a number of things that ought to be said.
Without a balance, struggling right now.
You shouldn't take action. Well, the RMT had a bullet. Illegal. British Airways stuff had a bullet. Illegal. They didn't have a bloody ballot before they took us to an unlawful war in Iraq and invaded Afghanistan. And it's time for peace. You're not having it all your own way. So what's the answer? The answer has been enunciated by previous speakers. Don't let them put worker against worker. Don't let them kid you by putting public and private workers up one another's throats. There is no difference between workers. They should stand together and recognise that they are the victims of a rotten and corrupt system. And instead of talking about wage cuts, there should be a demand for a wage increase and a demand for public expenditure to be increased, not decreased, here in Ireland. You know, comrades, you don't get out of a crisis like this by making workers pay the price of a crisis that they've created. Why is it that we can't, here in Ireland, begin to develop a wonderful rail system throughout the land? Why can't we protect the farming industry, the fisheries, rebuild the shipbuilding industry through the whole of Ireland? Yes, in what should be a united Ireland, as Connolly wanted, and Connolly fought and died for. We ought to see the nature of the system under which we live. Will never give us a thing. We will only get that which we're prepared to stand up and fight for. And I say to trade union leaders, stop listening to all the threats of intimidation, the threats of sequestration, the threats of penal attitude towards you. What can they do to you if you speak for workers? They can take your car off you. They can take your house off you, but they can't sequestrate your mind, your power and your faith. And I don't say that as someone else looking on. I did it. I stood firm and suffered through it. And I'm proud of what I did, and I'd do it again if I was faced with the same problem. We have riches beyond belief, both in this nation and in the United Kingdom. The only thing we don't have is a system of society where workers can take into their own hands the means of production, distribution and exchange. I speak to you today, yes, as a trade unionist, but also as a socialist and a Marxist. I speak to you in the hope that you will agree that we need a different system of society. As I look across at a man I admire probably more than any other, it's right that I should conclude with his words. When people tell you to take cuts, to tell you that you ought to show restraint, to tell you that you're asking for far too much, don't believe them. Believe James Connolly, who said, some men faint hearted ever see. Our programme to retouch. We'll insist whenever they speak that we demand too much. It is passing strange that I declare such statements cause me mirth. For our demands most moderate are.
We all
build on the earth.
Every year, in thousands of cities around the world, May Day is marked as a socialist festival. What were the origins of May Day? When did this process start? It all began over a century ago when the American Federation of Labor adopted an historic resolution which asserted that 8 hours shall constitute a legal day's labor from and after May the 1st of 1886. In the months prior to this date, workers in their thousands were drawn into the struggle for the shorter working day. Skilled and unskilled, black and white, men and women, native and immigrant were all becoming involved. In Chicago alone, 400,000 were on strike. A newspaper of that city reported that no smoke curled up from the tall chimneys of the factories and mills, and things had assumed a Sabbath-like appearance. This was the main centre of the agitation, and here the anarchists were in the forefront of the labour movement. It was to no small extent due to their activities that Chicago became an outstanding trade union centre and made the biggest contribution to the eight-hour movement. When, on May 1, 1886, the eight-hour strikes convulsed that city, one half of the workforce at the McCormick Harvester Company came out. 2 days later, a mass meeting was held by 6,000 members of the Lumber Shovers Union, who had also come out. The meeting was held only a block from the McCormick plant and was joined by some 500 of the strikers from there. The workers listened to a speech by the anarchist August Spies, who has been asked to address the meeting by the Central Labour Union. While Spies was speaking, urging the workers to stand together and not give in to the bosses, the strikebreakers were beginning to leave the nearby McCormick plant. The strikers, aided by the lumber shovers, marched down the street and forced the scabs back into the factory. Suddenly a force of 200 police arrived and without any warning attacked the crowd with clubs and revolvers. They killed at least one striker, seriously wounded 5 or 6 others, and injured an indeterminate number. Outraged by the brutal assaults he had witnessed, Spies went to the office of the Arbeiter Zeitung, a daily anarchist newspaper for German immigrant workers, and comprised a circular calling on the workers of Chicago to attend a protest meeting the following night. The protest meeting took place in the Haymarket Square and was addressed by Spies and two other anarchists active in the trade union movement, Albert Parsons and Samuel Fielden. Throughout the speeches, the crowd was orderly. Mayor Carter Harrison, who was present from the beginning of the meeting, concluded that nothing looked likely to happen to require police interference. He advised Police Captain John Bonfield of this and suggested that the large force of police reservists waiting at the station house be sent home. It was close to 10 in the evening when Fielden was closing the meeting. It was raining heavily and only about 200 people remained in the square. Suddenly a police column of 180 men, headed by Bonfield, moved in and ordered the people to disperse immediately. Fielden protested, "We are peaceable." At this moment, a bomb was thrown into the ranks of the police. It killed one, fatally wounded 6 more, and injured about 70 others. The police opened fire on the spectators. How many were wounded or killed by the police bullets was never exactly ascertained. A reign of terror swept over Chicago. The press and the pulpit called for revenge, insisting the bomb was the work of socialists and anarchists. Meeting halls, union offices, printing works, and private homes were raided. All known socialists and anarchists were rounded up. Even many individuals ignorant of the meaning of socialism and anarchism were arrested and tortured. "Make the raids first and look up the law afterwards," was the public statement of Julius Guarinelli, the state attorney. Eventually, 8 men stood trial for being accessories to murder. They were Spies, Fielden, Parsons, and 5 other anarchists who were influential in the labour movement. Adolf Fischer, George Engel, Michael Schwab, Louis Ling, and Oscar Niebe. The trial opened on June 21, 1886, in the criminal court of Cook County. The candidates for the jury were not chosen in the usual manner of drawing names from a box. In this case, a special bailiff, nominated by State's Anthony Guarinelli, was appointed by the court to select the candidates. The defence was not allowed to present evidence that the special bailiff had publicly claimed, "I am managing this case and I know what I am about. These fellows are going to be hanged as certain as death." The eventual composition of the jury was farcical, being made up of businessmen, their clerks, and a relative of one of the dead policemen. No proof was offered by the state that any one of the 8 men before the court had thrown the bomb, had been connected with its throwing, or had even approved of such acts. In fact, only 3 of the 8 had been in Haymarket Square that evening. No evidence was offered that any of the speakers had incited violence. Indeed, in his evidence at the trial, Mayor Harrison described the speeches as tame. No proof was offered that the violence had been contemplated. In fact, Parsons had brought his 2 small children to the meeting. That the 8 were on trial for their anarchist beliefs and trade union activities was made clear from the outset. The trial closed as it had opened, as was witnessed by the final words of Anthony Guarnelli's summation speech to the jury. Law is on trial. Anarchy is on trial. These men have been selected, picked out by the grand jury, and indicted because they were leaders. There are no more guilty than the thousands who follow them. Gentlemen of the jury, convict these men, make examples of them, hang them, and you save our institutions, our society. On August 19th, seven of the defendants were sentenced to death and kneed to 15 years in prison. After a massive international campaign for their release, the state compromised and commuted the sentences of Schwab and Felden to life imprisonment. Ling cheated the hangman by committing suicide in his cell the day before the executions. But on November 11th, 1887, Parsons, Engels, Spies and Fisher were hanged. 600,000 working people turned out for their funeral. The campaign to free Neeb, Schwab and Felden continued. On June 26, 1893, Governor Altgeld set them free. He made it clear he was not granting the pardon because he thought the men had suffered enough, but because they were innocent of the crime for which they had been tried. They and the hanged men had been the victims of hysteria, packed juries and a biased judge. The authorities had believed at the time of the trial that such persecution would break the back of the 8-hour movement. Indeed, evidence later came to light that the bomb may have been thrown by a police agent working for Captain Bonfalt as part of a conspiracy involving certain steel bosses to discredit the labour movement. When Spies addressed the court after he'd been sentenced to death, he was confident that this conspiracy would not succeed. If you think that by hanging us you can stamp out the labour movement, the movement from which the downtrodden millions, the millions who toil in misery and want, expect salvation, if this is your opinion, then hang us. Here you will tread on a spark, but there and there, behind you and in front of you and everywhere, flames blaze up. It is a subterranean fire. You cannot put it out. Over a century after that first May Day demonstration in Chicago, where are we? We stroll through town with our union banners, about the only day of the year we can get them out of head office. Then we stand around listening to boring and usually meaningless speeches by equally boring union bureaucrats. You have to keep reminding yourself that May Day was once a day when workers all over the world displayed their strength, proclaimed their ideals and celebrated their success. It is important that, once upon a time, it was like that. We can do it again. We need independent working-class politics. No collaboration with governments and bosses. Real solidarity with fellow workers in struggle, not a blinkered sectional outlook. We still need a further reduction in working hours, without loss of pay, to make work for the unemployed. We need revolutionary politics. That means politics that can lead us towards a genuine socialism where freedom knows no limits other than not interfering with the freedom of others. A socialism that is based on real democracy, not the present charade where we can choose from some of our rulers but may not choose to do without rulers. A real democracy where everyone affected by a decision will have the opportunity to have their say in making that decision. A democracy of efficiently coordinated workplace and community councils. A society where production is to satisfy needs and not to make profits for a privileged few. That is anarchism. This text is from a leaflet produced by the Workers' Solidarity Movement. You'll find a PDF of the leaflet and more audio files like this at www.wsm.ie. The audio in this download was recorded by Andrew Flood and Donald Fallon. Donald recorded the Scargill piece. The editing was done by Andrew Flood. You'll find more similar audio at www.wsm.ie.